in session at the Columbia Records 30th Street Studio, which is currently on view at the Morrison Hotel Gallery in Soho, is the first exhibition of photographs from the extensive Sony BMG's Icon Collectibles archive. It features candid shots of Miles Davis, Bob Dylan, Johnny Cash, Billie Holiday, Aretha Franklin, and others taken by Don Hunstein, the record company's in-house photographer, during recording sessions at the 30th Street Studio here in New York. Don Hunstein and Grammy Award-winning producer, writer, and record executive Michael Cascuna are here now to talk about the history of the legendary 30th Street Studio and the photographs that were taken there. Welcome to the show. Don, how did you get the job as a staff photographer for Columbia Records? Was that a standard kind of job at the time?
No, it wasn't. What happened was that publicity department at Columbia at that time, first of all, the industry was far smaller than it became later. And there were only three people working in the publicity area.
At big Columbia Records. Wow. Yeah. It was still the major record company with RCA.
Yeah. And I had been working as an assistant to a photographer who specialized in the entertainment business, and he did some shooting for Columbia, and I would deliver some of the pictures, the contact sheets or whatever. So they got to know me, and since the business was really getting bigger and bigger, and they had one of the three people on the staff who had organized the files of photographs, but she was getting more other kinds of duties there, and they needed somebody else to stay on top of those picture files, and which were about to explode. And they knew that I had a knowledge of photography, of course, and so they asked me if I wanted the job.
So you began as a librarian and wound up doing something quite different. Was the idea when you started taking those pictures to develop a historic record or to come up with images that could be used on record album covers?
Well, it was mostly for publicity purposes. Mm-hmm. You know, I would take calls from newspapers and magazines and so on. And we had a lab that we used, order the pictures from the lab and follow up on this. So, but the woman who ran this, her name was Debbie Ishlan. There are maybe a few people still out there who remember that name. She was very good at her job. She really liked me. We got along very well. Other people in the company, mostly in the sales staff, really, there was a tension between her and them. But I got along very well with her and she with me. And when she found out that I could do some photography that would be good enough, she started asking me occasionally to go to the recording studio, the famous 30th Street Studio, and do some pictures. And that's how it all started.
And how many years did you wind up doing that?
Oh, I can't say exactly.
But it seems to be the golden age because it's late 50s through the 60s at a time when Columbia was becoming the dominant recording company.
In my mind, it was the early The period from the late 50s to the late 60s was the period for recording and for photographs of recording people.
Michael, how did an old Greek Orthodox church on East 30th Street end up as a recording studio?
I don't know whose credit that goes, but in the 50s, when Columbia moved, they moved out of their studios at 799 7th Avenue, and they were looking for other locations, and they built some very excellent but conventional studios on East 52nd Street. And someone scouted this church that was up for sale, and it was a very brave person who did it, because when you walk into 30th Street, it looks like one of the most unmanageable, gigantic rooms in the world where you couldn't control sound at all. But it was, I worked there a lot in the 70s, and it was an extraordinary place. And
did it look like a church after it had been converted to recording studio?
No. Well, as you can see from Don's photos, the inside was pretty much gutted, and it still had the cathedral ceilings, but it was about 100 by 100 feet and probably 100 feet up. I don't know how high it was. I mean, I never even looked up there, but you could record solo piano or the most intimate jazz group or a full symphony orchestra in there. And in fact,
Getting a lot of echo, despite the fact
that
in churches you often get echo.
Yeah, well, they put wood paneling in strategic places and created an amazing acoustic space. And also, in those days, we still use a lot of baffles on wheels that to pocket sound and cordon people off. But it was an absolutely magical room.
And I've heard that you can tell from just listening to a track whether or not it was recorded at 30th Street. Is what makes it so identifiable?
I don't know, but it has its own room sound. I mean, every room has its own room sound. But 30th Street had such an identifiable sound that it isn't hard to pick it out when you're listening to master tapes.
Don?
Well, it was so well known around the industry that other companies came to rent recording too. The place was busy all the time.
And there are these legendary places. That studio, Rudy Van Gelder's. Nobody can explain Rudy Van Gelder's either. It was just his house, and somehow magic occurred there. What about photographing at 30th Street? Was it a good place to take pictures?
Well, yes and no. As Michael said, there was the lights were way up. They didn't touch that. They left it. Well, maybe they did. I don't know. I don't know that a church would have that kind of light. Well, I guess they did. But anyway.
Stained glass windows. I always thought that's what they had.
Yeah. No, he means the hanging lamps in there.
Yeah, not in there. There was a separate part of where they put the
control room.
Control room. And beyond that was the street. So the windows would be out on the street. You wouldn't see that in the church. So at that time. So, that lighting up there, and there were lots of them, lots of lamps, gave you an overall thing, which was very good. It was very good.
Because you couldn't use flash. It would distract the musicians while they were playing.
You couldn't.
And you took pictures of Miles Davis in that studio. In fact, we opened with something from Kind of Blue. Yeah. You photographed that session.
Yeah. Yeah, I did.
And Miles probably would have gotten very upset if he'd heard clicking noises and flash bulbs going.
No, but I by that time had developed the way of just knowing when and not to. But what I started to say was the lighting just was even. But if you wanted more, shall we say, interesting lighting, you'd have to bring in extra floor lamps, which I sometimes did, but not very often. Not during recording sessions would I do that.
How many of Miles' classic records were done in the studio? I know Kind of Blue, Porgy and Bess.
Yeah, all the collaborations with Gil Evans, Porgy and Bess, Miles Ahead, Sketches of Spain, they naturally were all done there. I mean, that room was so large that the New York Philharmonic would record there. A lot of his small...
And West Side Story, the original cast.
A lot of casts were done there.
Oh, they did cast shows. Because Goddard Lieberson, who was the president of the company then, knew everybody in the theater. And he was probably the person who got all those Broadway shows almost for Columbia.
You also photographed the famous jazz recording sessions like Duke Ellington's Jazz Parties and Dave Brubeck's The Time Out album. But many people will probably be most familiar with some of the things you did with Bob Dylan. Didn't you take the photograph that was used on the cover of the Freewheeling Bob Dylan?
Yeah. Yes, I did.
So at that point, you're taking pictures for Columbia.
Mm-hmm.
Did you plan to take a picture of him on the street, or did you think that you just do something more
close? Here's what
happened.
At that point, the fellow who was in charge of publicity, and this was after Dylan's first LP was released, he said, "This kid is going to be big. We have to fill the photo files with pictures on him and do it fast." And so he arranged with Dylan to meet him in his apartment in downtown. And so we went there. Susie Rotolo, his girlfriend, was there. There was a fourth floor walk-up, as I recall, right off 6th Avenue. And most of what I shot was him just in a kind of old chair, comfortable looking. In fact, he sat up on the back of it for most of it, and he had his guitar in front of him. And then I asked Susie to go around behind him and lean over, and we did a few of those. Well, it was in a late February, and it was getting dark. We didn't need the light out there from the outside. It was because the room we were in was way inside the apartment. So I said, "Well, let's get something outside," and that's when we went down.
And the wind and everything—it just worked perfect.
Yeah, and we only did a few shots because the light was going.
Now we have a slideshow of some of the pictures you've done, some of the pictures in the exhibit, and actually the one with Bob Dylan has him sitting at a piano, which is interesting. But we have Johnny Cash with his guitar in his lap and his wife. There's a photograph of Billie Holiday taken not long before she died. Yeah. Miles with a huge smile on his face from the Porgy and Bess sessions. I know you had took pictures of Aretha Franklin when she was just leaving gospel music.
Yeah.
Did you have any sense? I've spoken to musicians about when they worked on great sessions, and I asked them, you know, did you know that you were doing something extraordinary at the time? And they said, nah, it was just a session. It was only later when people started asking me about it. What about when, and I asked this of both of you, Michael and Don, when you're at a session that later turns out to be really, really important, do you have a sense that you're seeing something historic, or does every session seem to be the best session you've ever heard?
I think every session tends to be hard work. Mm-hmm. You're not even thinking about anything but getting it in as best as possible and on budget.
That's a hit.
Yeah. Well, that you think at times, but you never think this is going to be historically significant. You're just thinking about an hour from now. You know.
Mm. No, that's true.
And when you were taking the pictures, you were just thinking about getting the light right.
Doing the job.
In retrospect, you must be thrilled to know that you were there at so many historic events.
Well, I think so, especially these days because I keep getting asked about that period.
My Fair Lady session with Julie Andrews. I mean, there's what a range. The studio was closed down, wasn't it?
Yeah, kind of a sad story. When the record business was really hitting the skids in the early 80s, Columbia was looking to raise some money, and they got an offer from someone who was going to buy it and maintain the church, keep it as a studio. And then they got an offer from a developer who was willing to pay another $400,000 more. And the developer won, and it got torn down, and there's apartment buildings up there. But you know, that leads me to, I just wanted to say one thing, because Don mentioned Goddard Lieberson. And that was a better era of American business when there were people of such quality and integrity who could be the president of a company. And Goddard is did so many prescient things, and it was always quality that drove him. And I think it's so smart of Columbia to have hired Don on staff, because now there's a whole body of work that covers one of the most important eras in American music, jazz, classical, folk, everything.
We have Glenn Gould choosing between four pianos.
Yeah, that's a great shot.
Well, we've run out of time pretty much, but I want to tell everyone about the slideshow on our website at WNYC.org and the exhibit in session at the Columbia Records 30th Street Studio on view at the Morrison Hotel Gallery. It's located at 116 Prince Street in Soho, New York. And here's one of the sessions that was filmed by Don Hunstein. Thank you, Don, so much. And thank you, Michael Cascuna, for being on our show.
Thank you.